You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey there, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. I'm with Noah Oldham and Kathy Litton today. Noah is the founding pastor of August Gate Church in St. Louis, and he's NAM's Senior Director of Church Planting Deployment. He's responsible for getting church planters equipped and out on the church planting field. He and his wife, Heather, have five children. They live in St. Louis. And then Kathy Litton leads the spouse development team at the Send Network. It's Kathy's married to Ed, and Ed's the lead pastor of Redemption Church in Mobile, Alabama. And they have six children and 11 grandchildren together. And today we're going to talk about a subject that's really near and dear to each of our hearts as parents. We're going to talk about raising godly kids in our very secular cities. And I don't know about you guys, but it feels like the volume has gotten turned up on this subject matter maybe 4 or 5 to 10 lately. Do you guys feel that way?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think we're increasingly landslide kind of thing going, becoming more secular.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. And my kids are in the stage of life where they're in school right now, when all the things that are happening, all the conversations are happening in schools and seem to be taken off on online and on Twitter. And so it's those ages that are super important. So this is something that's near and dear to mine, my wife's heart.
Yeah. You guys, Kathy, you've raised kids. Your kids are out of the house now. Is that right?
Absolutely. I've got grandkids, a bunch of them.
So you're thinking about your grandkids right now, but how have, you know, if you were trying to articulate some of the differences in what church planters and their families are facing right now and what you were facing when your kids were in school, what would you say?
No, I had a conversation with a planning wife that is in another region, and she was talking about June 1st starts off as Gay Pride Month, and she was going to take her younger two kids out of public school during it's the last few weeks of school, because they would be subjected, these are elementary school children, not older than that, but to so much information and pressure in that school system celebrating Gay Pride in elementary school settings. And so it made me really open my eyes to see the vulnerability that our kids have, especially we're talking early elementary school. Those messages are going down to a really low age group of kids. And it's very alarming to me. And I know my kids are grown and they're raising their own children, but this slide into secularism is just increasing faster and faster.
Yeah. Noah, how have you and your family processed these types of issues?
Yeah, so we planted our church, and a month after we planted, we had our first child. And so for the past 13 years, we've been raising children alongside planting this church, raising this church. We really say we have two daughters at the same time.
Yeah.
And very early on, as we approached school age, we saw the writing on the wall. We were living in the urban core of St. Louis. We're looking at schools, not only low-performing schools, but also what is the worldview being taught? Mm-hmm. And hearing all the conversations at conferences, there seemed to be, you know, a couple of different large opinions. And we had to wade through that, not only personally for us as a family, but also for all the families in our church. We planted a church that most people are about our age for years and years. And so young kids, all in school age, people with different opinions, holding things in an open hand that weren't what we would call gospel issues or closed-handed issues, but still having really informed convictional ideas. And so we started homeschooling when our daughter was 4. We started homeschooling. And this year is the first year, actually, that we've not homeschooled our kids. Wow. And so we've had them in a traditional classroom. And so we have some comparison to give now.
This conversation came about, this podcast episode came about because of a text I got from Kathy, where she was talking about the issue she just described when we opened up. And then I think it was a day or two later, I saw on Twitter some a dad that I know who's in ministry was struggling with his child getting bullied in school for holding Christian values. And every Christian parent who's, particularly those Christian parents who are in ministry, doing ministry in difficult urban places, faces really difficult schooling choices. And just like you just referenced, Noah. So, Kathy, I think you were even saying before we pressed record today that the schooling choice is something that ChurchLink spouses are talking about a lot on the Facebook groups with ChurchLink spouses. Yeah. So why is this decision so heart-wrenching and difficult?
Well, when I look and I read all those comments from our planning wives on our page that is private and they're able to really share and be honest, it's very helpful to them to be in that context with one another. Mm-hmm. And these are very strong women, so don't underestimate their strength, their faithfulness, their commitment to it. But they're also navigating these rocky waters of this increasing secularization of the schools, which includes so many hard issues like the gay agenda. And I think they want to make, and you can see they're wrestling with it. They don't want to vacate secular spaces. That is not what they're talking about. The tension lies is so sincere in their heart. They don't want to give up mission for their comfort, and I didn't want to use that word, but I mean for, and so they're working hard to stay engaged in the mission field, but also that tension of being responsible parents and understanding this worldview that can be shaping to them. And so, and they all have a unique solution to it. There's no one cookie cutter pattern for this, depending on the age of kids and everything else. And so, it's really challenging. And, you know, primarily for me as a leader, they need my understanding, my care, my empathy. And that's what we needed to do to support our planning couples in this and not dismiss this reality too quickly for them, because it's very deep. It's very serious.
Yeah. You know, we have this parenting philosophy in my house. I think time will tell whether it was a good parenting philosophy or not, but it basically has been, we want to treat our children like children to the extent that they act like children, and we want to treat them like adults to the extent they act like adults. So we give them privileges earlier when they act maturely than maybe other parents might give their kids those same privileges. And sometimes we hold things back from them longer than would be expected because we don't think they have the maturity to handle it. So, and we've talked to them about that a lot. For me, it highlights kind of this tension that I'm always feeling with my kids. Like, I'm raising adults, not kids. So I need these young folks in my household to be able to operate as adults. And I just know that every Christian parent, every ministry parent is wrestling with you just called it a tension, I think, Kathy, the tension between we came here to minister, to preach Jesus in a context of people who don't know Jesus at all. And so we're on mission together as a family, and the reality that in some ways, as a parent, it's my responsibility to shield my children until they have the maturity to handle difficult and complex moral choices. So Noah, how do you, I mean, I don't know if there's a question buried in there somewhere, but man, I mean, you're raising five kids as well, and you've made the switch between schooling choices. Is this something you're constantly examining, or?
You know, it really is. And that's where it came down to for us. I remember hearing Eric Mason at a conference challenge planters to not send their kids to live the mission for them. Mm. And that was a light on for me, because we were thinking, oh, we're in the city. We want to gauge with the community. And what is the center of community in most communities? It's the school system. And the challenge was, don't send my kids to do my dirty work. Don't send my kids to do the hard stuff. I should be leading from the front. And when we got in that situation, learning, are they going to benefit from this? Yeah. So we believe that during those early years, it's very, very important that we are doing all we can to shape their worldview. Recently, I've spent some time delving into the subject of transgenderism and how there's a huge target right now. We're seeing a lot of young women, teenage girls, that are coming out as transgender. And as you dive into this and you hear some girls who have now like de-transed, they call it, what they're saying is they were looking for a way to explain all of their body issues that every teenage girl that I know has.
Yeah.
They're trying to deal with their acceptance issues and their attraction issues and all of these things. And they found that they could find acceptance in their social setting and even online by claiming an identity that was one of these new protected situations. And if my kids are, and I think my kids would be susceptible to those things because they're still shaping their identity in Christ.
Yeah.
I think your motto is good. I think I would add to that, I wouldn't do it as long as they act like adults. It's as long as they act like Christians. Yeah. And so until my kids' worldview is formed in Christ, I don't know that I'm ready to launch them out into those situations until I have a couple other things that are under wraps first.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking to watch your kids suffer and struggle. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when my kids go through difficulty, it's like it's the worst form of pain for me. I mean,
yeah.
I could almost go through anything myself, but if I have to watch them go through something, it's just extra painful. Yet sometimes those sets of struggles really galvanize convictions in our children, you know.
So, yes.
So it's like I'm trying to keep my kids from something that God's going to use in their life, like He uses trials in all of our mm-hmm. lives. And mm-hmm. so, I have to preach to myself sometimes and remind myself those truths in James about trials and difficulties apply to my children as well as me. As you've watched your kids struggle through living in difficult secular environments and being on mission, co-laboring, you know, with you, not out in front of you, but with you in some ways, how have you seen their faith become more real? I mean, Kathy, you've raised kids and Noah, you're in the midst of that. How have you seen faith galvanizing your kids?
I want to say this for Noah talks, but I will say that your kids' faith is still being formed in their 20s. Do you know what I mean? And so it's not like, well, at 17, we're good. And like, no, because you and I know 17, 18, 19, 20 often is when their faith is in a different secular space with different kind of challenges to it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My kids are, two are in their late 30s, one is early 40s. But when I see them and my kids lost their dad at a very fragile time, been a time that they really could have shed their faith with disappointment and bitterness. And when I see the Spirit working in them and the reality of their faith, it gets a little messy for a bit. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that's the part as a parent you can't control. We need to control what we can control while we can control it. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it is watching your child's faith emerge, watching my people at this point being servants in His church. You see what I'm saying? There's a beauty in that, but I can't control that. And Noah and you both are living with kids under your house. You still have that opportunity to make this huge imprint on them. But here I am with the grandmother role. I'm still cheering them on. And my role is still very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've learned, because our situation isn't, we went from homeschool to even public school yet. This is the first year we've had them in the traditional classroom, and it's been a private Christian school, not our specific doctrine. It's a Lutheran school. Mm-hmm. And so they're learning some different doctrine, but you know, it's not just Christian people who send their kids to Christian schools.
That's right.
And so
that's exactly
my fifth
right.
grade son is playing sports with eighth grade boys who have access to things and say things that grown men only had access to and said when I was in junior high or in fifth grade. So he's coming home with all of that. He's an athlete and we're having all of those conversations. I think the benefit that we have found is that we have partners in the school. Now, my mom was a school teacher my entire life until she died, and she always felt that her hands were tied. And these aren't the issues we're facing today. Her hands were tied at a certain point to insert herself and be a partner to parents and students when it came to issues of their faith. I can't imagine now what's going on and the way. And we have some teachers in our school and I have some friends that are teachers in our church and then in the community here. And they say the same thing. Their hands are tied. And so this, that wisdom that planting couples need as they go into these cities, we want to engage in the community in all these ways. How do we do it? I would just speak with encouragement. My church engaged with the public school system from the first year that we planted for years and years and years without having any children in the school system. We did mentoring and we did homework help. We did reading curriculums. We did all kinds of things and never had a kid in that school system. And so I would encourage them, think of them as separate situations sometimes, not one in the same. And if they end up being one in the same, praise God, He's multiplying your opportunity.
Yeah, that's really helpful. The alternative, you know, to what you're talking about right now and what we've been mainly focused on since we've been having this conversation, the alternative to subjecting our kids to secular worldviews is isolating them, mm-hmm. Which can create this whole new set of problems. I think in some ways, as a Christian parent, I was more scared of making little Pharisees than I was of little like rebels and reprobates. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of my parenting could be, you know, if you were dissecting why I parented the way I did or why I've done what I've done, it's been to steer away from that tendency because I grew up, you know, seeing the underbelly of that in big ways. So what kind of problems in particular do you think can develop when parents try to over-isolate their children from all forms of worldliness and don't teach them how to?
Well, my kids grew up in a secular city, went to school in a secular, very secular city, Denver. And I know that Rick used to say this, I want to teach my kids to be thinkers. And, you know, there's a lot going on that you want them to do, but thinking for themselves and thinking Christianly and biblically is very much a part of it because they're going to go on the rest of their life hearing all kinds of messages. So to make them little robotic Christians with just, and I'm not minimizing Bible memorization, but I'm telling you, if they don't see and understand a reality in their home of the hope of the gospel, and they're able to think from even the most immature biblical worldview, it's a help. And that's what you want them to do.
Yeah. I think it's intangibles too. Like joy, you know, like joy in your household is
totally,
is my house a place? I mean, I grew up with parents who didn't love the Lord for much of my upbringing. But my parents were kind to people. My house was open and they were hospitable to all kinds of people. We had random people living with us at various times. And there were a lot of things that weren't great about my house, but like love and joy was always part of the environment in my household. And I just, it's interesting when I became a follower of Christ, it's like I wanted gospel inserted into my home, my children, but I didn't want to lose some of those things that my family, you know, some of those characteristics that they displayed because they were so good.
Yeah, that's really good. I think one of the caricatures of like specifically the homeschooling movement is, and the question they often get is, what about socialization? And kind of the caricature response that we homeschoolers often give is, yeah, that's what we're worried about. We're not sending our kids to be socialized in this environment. I think there's an intentionality that has to take place. Like the sheltering, I've never really experienced the sheltering from anybody that I've known that's been isolated. I just, for whatever reason, I don't have a lot of friends in my sphere that were sheltered and are now saying there's consequences because of it. Instead, they end up being really well-adjusted adults. Most homeschool kids that I've known, they're able to have adult conversations in eighth grade. They could look at an adult face-to-face. They're not staring at their cell phone all the time. They're not awkward in all those situations. There's a maturity. But I just happen to be around some really good families that have done that well. Our desire is to not keep them from information, but is to filter that information and explain that information to them. So when they're hearing, all my kids know about LGBT issues. They understand what those things are. And we're able to explain with both biblical conviction and compassion what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're in a public school today, not only will they find out from somebody else, they'll find out with an only positive spin from another direction and also a negative spin towards anybody who disagrees, as well as often keeping those conversations to the school classroom. More and more we're finding out, hey, this is what we talk about at school, and you know, we're not going to bother your folks with that unless a parent, you know, inserts themselves.
Yeah.
And so what we found is it's hard work either way. If you homeschool your kids, it's tremendous hard work. If you send them to public school or private school, it's tremendous hard work. And we need to give each other support and grace in all of it.
Yeah, that's a major difference. We started out this episode talking about what things have changed in the last few years. I think that's, you know, the assumption that our kids aren't getting you know, wired wrong at school, and we're going to have to unwire and rewire when they get home. That does feel more labor intensive to me than actually just setting things straight from the beginning.
Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating conversation. I know there's a lot more that we could discuss on this subject. And I know that church planting families are facing lots of real heart-wrenching decisions as it relates to schooling choices and even the toll their mission field is playing on their families. I know many church planting families that are listening to this left some comfortable spot in another mm-hmm. place to mm-hmm. go and plant a church. And mm-hmm. they're trusting every day that the Lord's going to use their faith and their efforts. Anything the two of you would say to the family in that situation about the goodness of their service to Christ as a church planter?
Well, I think the ultimate trust in the Father in this is really trusting Him with your kids. There was a day that the Ferguson family left everybody they knew in one part of the country and went out somewhere else to leave all those connectivities to do something different in a different city that was very secular. I remember that very well. But, you know, we had to trust God with our children. That didn't mean we put the car in neutral, because now we had some new things to really consider about our children with far more intentionality than we had before. You can't go in neutral either, but we do have to trust Him and that He will bring fruit in their life that they need to see and understand.
Yeah.
One of my encouragements would be obedient as far as you know is what obedience is. Mm-hmm. If you know that there are certain things you ought to be doing in the lives of your children, no matter what the schooling choice is for you, do those things. Uh-huh. Do those things each and every day. Mm-hmm. Make sure that's a priority. Make sure your kids know that there's an open door, and have intentional conversations. I know we're going to have another conversation about discipleship at home, and that is really, really important, that intentionality of creating and developing a worldview. As Kathy said, well, these kids are good thinkers. Yeah. And also, the way we talk about it is taking every truth claim that sets itself up against the knowledge of God and making it obedient to the knowledge of Christ. And we help them do that, they're going to be smart as a tack. They may still be Pharisees, but a lot of Pharisees got saved in that New Testament church. So.
Yes. So Noah and Kathy, thanks for being with me today. And I really appreciate having you. And for those of you who are listening, if you are not part of a church planting family, let me encourage you to reach out to the Send Network. We would love to make you part of our church planting family so that the brotherhood and sisterhood and camaraderie that comes from working with co-laborers in the gospel can be a benefit to you as well. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.